podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Cyber isn't one thing, cyber is everything. It cuts across every industry, connecting everybody. It's the same way Dakota State University isn't just a university. With our Cyber 27 initiative, DSU has a stronger, more secure future. We're adding more faculty and welcoming more students, building labs, adding degrees, conducting game-changing research. We need partners to work with us and put our graduates to work for them. Visit DSUCyber27.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Party Plan Podcast.
Hey!
It's pod 398.
Whoa.
Ooh, getting, should probably organise something for 400 at some point. I'm Jim Daly. Kevin Day is with me. It's an international break special. Kevin Day, hello to you. We're going to talk in part one, of course, about the marathon march. My first question to you is, how are you feeling today on Tuesday?
I'm feeling surprisingly bratty. I'm all right, actually. I've got you'll explain that reference.
Well, yeah, that needs explaining, yeah.
Well, we were just 7:30 in the morning. We were all waiting for the pep talk, which we always get told off in because we sit in the back giggling while it's happening because the bloke tells us how to cross roads at traffic lights, things, important things like that. But we were just discussing how professional and grown up Crystal Palace Football Club had been when they tried to show a message from the manager on the big screen that didn't work. You could see him, but you couldn't hear him. But eventually we got sent it, and basically Patrick Vieira's message was taking the piss out of Bratty for a whole minute, saying, I don't know what to think, that Bratty will get us the whole way around, you know.
Don't let me down, Bratty.
Don't let me down, Bratty. So obviously much more funny on the day than it is now, clearly.
Well, I'll drop it in a minute, yeah. And people can listen. It was a nice message.
Yeah, it was a lovely, it was a really nice message from Patrick Vieira, actually, and it shows that I think he's not acting, I think he gets this club.
Good morning. Saturday, 7:30. You guys are ready up and ready to go. I just want to wish you good luck, at the same time to congratulate you all for being there and supporting our community. 26 miles is going to be a long way, but I'm sure that you all going to complete the marathon. I'm not sure about Brighty, so I want you guys to be sure that he will be at the end. Brighty, don't disappoint me, please.
I genuinely think he gets this club, and I think he understands what's happening, and I think he understands the culture of it, and it's because of the culture of this club that I just thank my lucky, halfway around that march, I just thank my lucky stars, I'm a Palace fan, because I don't care what any other fans think, we're a special club, a special community and special fans, and it was a joy to have. My little toe looks like it's been in a fight with Tyson Fury, to be honest, but the rest of me is all right. I have to say my favourite bit was when Chris Grierson's dog licked my feet for 5 minutes. Which was lovely.
Not as weird as it sounds.
No, I would pay that dog to do it again. It's the most badly named dog in the world. It's called Zeus. You expect some kind of mastiff coming around the corner, not this floppy little... It's like a Chris Grierson. It's a Chris Grierson version of a dog, basically. It's this harmless vegan little dog coming walking around. That's just why he's licking my toes. It's the first meat that poor little animal's been allowed near.
The dog, but he took out the dog.
The dog, sorry.
Yeah. We'll clarify that.
Although at that stage, I would have paid Chris to lick my toes. At that stage, to be perfectly honest.
Listen, we do have a few questions and some thank yous to do for the marathon march. But let's introduce our other guests. Speaking of culture, as you were there, Kevin, John Curran is here. So that's good timing. Hello to you, JC. How you doing?
Hey, JD, fine. It's great to be back on. I feel like I'm the Martin Kelly of the podcast.
You mean one of our favourite squad members and vastly underrated and appreciated, but loved by the FYP family. Good to have you on. And also someone who is maybe feeling worse for wear, but for other reasons for this weekend, it's Joe Walker. Joe, how are you? And tell us what you're up to this weekend. It wasn't quite Marathon March, but it wasn't far off, was it?
Wasn't quite Marathon, but it did equally knock me out for the following day. I've got friends who are DJs from I've come up with on radio, and they're now hitting that point where they're going to headline super clubs and play these rooms or put on their own nights. And I've always said from when I was younger, I'll always show support, but you know, you kind of forget how these things work after a while. So I said, I'll make an appearance. What time is it? Oh, doors are open at midnight, and I'm on at 4 o'clock. And it's like, right, okay. So I've just, I've tried to not be, I've tried to not kill the vibe. You know, I'm sort of dead on my feet, but I'm just standing by a wall, letting everyone else enjoy themselves without getting in the way, letting fabric be fabric. And then, so Saturday was a bit of a write-off, but no, I'm okay other than that. I still imagine better than you guys are doing. That's quite a Herculean effort on the weekend. Well done.
Well, thank you very much. It was, I mean, Kevin, about 150 people, I think, did it this year. 150 or 60, maybe, I think.
That's 145, I think it was, altogether.
145.
And you managed to speak to most of the females on the march.
You are
catnip to women of a certain age. You're just surrounded by them.
I'm going to run that by Andy Street, because that feels like libel, and I'm pretty sure I can see
it's slander for a start, but how is saying that you're attractive to women insulting in any way, shape, or form?
But
judging by the look on your face, you're not insulted. You look you're running your fingers through your hair as we speak.
I'm not doing that. It's also libel because it's been documented, Kevin. So,
oh, I see. Okay.
Passed one of my media law exams, just not the other one or the other.
Did you go to college?
Some would dispute that. Shall we do some thank yous then, Kevin? Because it was a fantastic day at the weekend. As you say, 145 people doing it. Just had an email actually from the foundation. They've raised £90,000 already. They're not far off £100,000, which would be absolutely amazing. Now, at FYP, we set ourselves a target of £3,000, as last year's total was £2,800. We thought it'd be lovely if we can get to £3,000. As we record this podcast, we're currently on £11,938, which is absolutely mind-blowing and humbling. Fantastic. And overwhelming. Lovely. At the same time. Now, that does include an incredible donation from John Texter, Palace's new coroner, for about £7,000, $10,000. But even without that, we'd be knocking on the door of £5,000, which would be far and away our best ever total. And that is down to the generosity of our listeners and Palace fans in general. Yeah. I mean, it's been mind-blowing. And checking along the way, getting these updates from Just Giving, every few minutes that someone had donated, every single amount they donated gave us a little boost, didn't it, on the way?
It was more than every few minutes. It's astonishing. You have to forget we're coming out of a global financial crisis. South London is an area that's particularly economically badly hit at any time. And for us to raise over £4,000 from fans is absolutely brilliant. And most of it's in 10s and 20s, and that is brilliant. But as it just keeps coming in, and like you say, it just gives you a little boost for 100 yards, and they're coming in with messages, and so much of it is raised on the day. I think they enjoy seeing us hurt. But then the John Texter one came in, accidentally nearly killing you because you stopped in the middle of the road when you saw it.
It was a residential road, thankfully. There was
at the moment it was. Well, that's the other thing I'd do, because you and Street, you were on your phone so much of it, I was just having to guide you around estate agent signs and low-hanging branches because one of you would have got knocked out.
Would you like to know really quickly, an admission that I didn't tell anybody on the walk at the time, but because I was on my phone so much, mostly doing updates on Twitter and checking the Just Giving and stuff, I did step in dog poo about halfway around the walk. And when you guys went to get water from a shop, I had to discreetly try and pour it on my shoe to get rid of it. But in the end, I had to wash it off when I got home. So that was very
So Jim, there's you walking and stepping in dog shit, and there's Kevin walking and having his toes licked by a dog.
Yeah.
It kind of...
I don't think it was the same dog.
I hope not, or else I know who to play.
If it was dog vomit, you'd know that a dog had thrown up after licking. But the John Texter thing is great. I mean, look, we all know, John Caron will know this, John Texter's a very wealthy man, so $10,000 to him is probably the equivalent of a tenner to the rest of us. But or we were speculating that maybe he'd sacked his PA because he meant $10. She accidentally did 10,000. But what was, I thought what was more interesting, and it's pertinent in the light of what we're talking about later on with another of our American owners, was the message he sent with it. And he talked in his message about one of the reasons he was growing to love Palace was that he was growing to know about the culture of the club and its, you know, and how different it is in the States. So that the message was almost as important. It doesn't matter who he gives the money to because it's all going to the foundation, but the message he sent with it was, I think, just as important because it's nice to know that they're at least paying lip service to the idea that they're not just investing in a business, that they actually know the nature of this football club. That was encouraging, but also that was quite exciting.
It was, yeah. Yeah. JC, I mean, I think we're lucky as Palace fans in general, aren't we? I think they're a very supportive bunch anyway, and you can see that from the donations that people have made. But and obviously, we're trying not to focus too much on the John Texter donation as well, because we want to make sure that people are aware that we appreciate every single penny that people have given us, not just, you know, this big donation. But it's a nice nod, I guess, from our new co-owner to the things that are important for Palace, which is obviously the foundation that works in the community and helps local people, especially during the last 18 months. So it was, it was definitely well received and thankful.
The other problem, Joe and John, as well, and this is the reason why, John, your ears may have been burning, because we were talking through a couple of your stories and how much we've enjoyed them. But the other problem is, this is the first time we've done the Marathon March, we've had nothing to complain about football-wise. It's because normally we get halfway round on the adrenaline of moaning about the fucking shit we're putting up with. But now we have 10 minutes at the start of, it's all right, isn't it? It's great. Conor Gallagher is brilliant. And then we actually had to talk about feelings and emotions and podcasts. It's exactly, Joe. It's really hard work. But that was it's another indication of the progress we are making as a team. In that we've suddenly, you know, we haven't got as many points as we want, but we're suddenly playing a completely different style of football. We were talking about the way people like Jermaine Jenas and are talking about us, and Carragher, the way they're talking about us, and our, they're not just talking about the atmosphere anymore. They're talking about the way we play football. So that was great. So there's a real optimistic feel about the whole thing. Basically, I wouldn't, you know. What Joe should have done is a 26-mile walk and then gone to Fabric for the whole night. Yeah, or the other way around, gone to Fabric and then just come straight onto the walk. That would have been...
They have Tyson Fury.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you they know, have the sofas in Fabric. You can actually fall asleep there if you
the irony is, out of all of us, the one with most energy is John Curran. He's the one. The anthropologist is the one with the most energy in this relationship.
Jason, you were going to say something a minute ago?
Yeah, I think it's also fitting, and this is slightly kind of me running on another yarn, but slightly fitting when this march happened. It was a day or two after the most vulgar, grotesque ever football buyout of a football club that I hope I never see again in my life. And to think that, you know, we're a club that never moaned saying we should be better than we are, and a club that values community as we do, and we've always had that as our kind of South London proud, but, you know, school of hard knocks mentality. So that was also pleasing to see that, the humans at the centre.
Do you know, we were talking about that, John, on the march, the sheer sophistry of this argument that the Newcastle haven't been taken over by the Saudi government. They've been taken over by an investment company, which is entirely run by the Saudi government. The people involved, and it's like, none of us begrudge the fans of another club an adventure, but in 5 years' time, all those fans that have been moaning about Ashley will be moaning about the fact they've been priced out of Newcastle United Football Club, because that's what will happen. That's the cost of getting into the Champions League. It's not just the investment for the owners, but they're, you know, whatever they're calling them now, legacy fans. In 5 years' time, Newcastle United might be in the Champions League, but half of those people, those Newcastle fans who are going now, won't be able to go. Mm-hmm. Simply won't be able to afford it. It's as simple as that. And, you know, there will be some economic benefit to the local area, but not, most of it isn't going into the hands of small printers or small shops.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and these people are investing for a reason, and eventually they'll take the money out and go somewhere else. And it's this argument that it's not Saudi Arabia that's taking them over is look. And of course, yeah, let's face it, there are other clubs in the Premier League who can't occupy the moral high ground because of, you know, it's grotesque for Man City fans to be complaining about this. And it's, but the only upside is anything that gets Man United, Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea moaning is fine by me. It really is fine by me, you know. And it's like I think we all agreed that at the moment Palace are managing the balancing act quite well. In that they're getting investment in, but they're not leaving us behind in a way that Newcastle will inevitably leave. You talk to Man City fans now, any Man City fan over the age of 40, I guarantee you, if you ask them what their favourite game was, they will say the game at Wembley when they were 2-0 down to Gillingham with a minute to go. They all say that. They don't say, oh, it was a Champions League away or a Champions League final. It's that game, and they're the fans that are left behind by this exciting new project. And it's annoying for us. It's annoying for Brighton fans, Southampton fans, Burnley fans, because another club's being taken out of our division. You know, Newcastle are traditionally a club you think, well, we can finish above them, we can get points off them. And it may not happen this season, but next season they won't be struggling. My only... It's not a hope, because I don't wish ill on any fans. They've still got 12 weeks to the transfer window. It's going to be interesting to see how the players react, because most of those players will know in their heart of hearts that they're off. You know, they haven't... The Saudis haven't invested in Longstaff and Shelvey, they won't be there next season. So whether they respond to that by saying, right, let's see if I can stay in the squad, or whether they just go, sod it, I'll play for 90 minutes, but I ain't going to get hurt. It's going to be really interesting, because Steve Bruce knows in his heart of hearts he's not going to be manager.
Well, he may not be manager now, Joe, I think.
We've got them next weekend, I believe, and there's every chance that could be, I don't know, Lucien Favre's first game, wouldn't it be?
It would be. It'd be really interesting to see what happens.
Let's wrap up part one by talking about we do have questions actually about the Newcastle thing, and maybe we can come to them in part two, because I can imagine it'll be pretty much condemnation all round, I'd imagine.
Let's not forget though, JD, remember 15, 20 years ago, there was talk of the Gaddafi family buying into Palace. And there were plenty of Palace fans who said, I don't care where that money comes from. If it gets us into the European Cup as it was then or whatever, then, you know, there are Palace fans who would say, I wouldn't be...
You can't have a go at Colonel Gaddafi and his family. What? Sure, come on.
Well, it was, you know, they were just, as it happens, they were just keeping the country together, weren't they? It's just, it turned out. But, you know, there will be Palace fans. But the trouble is as well, the Palace fans that benefited from a takeover like Newcastle will be Palace fans that aren't Palace fans yet. That's what's going to happen at Newcastle. It's going to be people who have never been to a football match before in the North East will go, well, we have to get a box for this. We've got to be part of this. Our company's got to be sponsoring this. And that's what it will change the experience.
I can't remember when that Gaddafi thing was, but I feel like Palace were struggling in the Championship at the time. I mean, probably were. Let's face it,
we just got promoted. We just won the playoff final, and I think Jordan had intimated that he was looking to sell up now that he'd kind of achieved his 5-year plan.
Hey, ding, 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 ding. That's interesting. I mean, obviously, Joe, the club's in a much better state now, and I guess as well, when you do compare it to the sort of things that are going on at Newcastle, and when you bring in things like the foundation and the march and stuff, I think there's quite a lot to be proud of, isn't it, at Palace really at the moment, not just on the pitch but off it as well, particularly when you look at the work the foundation is doing, and then the generosity of Palace fans to support us and other walkers this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely something to really, because Mel, you know, we were quite been quite moody over the last couple of years as fans, but stuff like this does really help to remind you of what it's all about, and remembers why it's a club, your football club is more about what just happens on the pitch. It's all about that Saturday, the match day experience sometimes, or just connecting with people you wouldn't otherwise do every couple of weeks. And as I'm sure we'll get to with the interview with Josh Harris, and also to some of the things you say, it's along with John Texter's message, along with Patrick Vieira's message, what some of the players have been doing during the last 18 months, Zaha, for example, they know it matters. And I think it's not even something they can ignore. They feel like they have to really, if they really want to be a part of this club and get what Palace is about, they have to toe that line as well. And really, I think, in fact, beyond that, I think they actually are quite seduced by that idea and quite like the appeal of that. And which is, given the context of this last week or so with other clubs and takeovers, reassuring. Is actually, you know, some of our investors, they've had criticism before of being a bit quiet. And I think we've seen in hindsight that perhaps you know, we've actually got it pretty good by comparison.
Well, also, we at the route took us past the new academy, mm-hmm. which 3 years ago was a security hut with a bemused security guard trying to fight off toddlers who were looking for the soft ball play area, and is now state of the art. I mean, it's just an amazing facility. So yeah, we're heading in the right direction, and we're managing to do it with sensible investment. Hopefully we don't discover that any of these are secret tyrants of a lair in the volcano, but you know, but John, it's interesting, John. Yeah, I mean, from your point of view, from the way you look at the world, from an anthropologist's point of view, it's really interesting, because Newcastle fans will be in a dilemma. A lot of them will be in a dilemma. Yeah, a lot. There'll be a lot of gay Newcastle fans will be wondering how they should react to this. There'll be a lot. There'll be also so, but at the same time, they're being tempted by this huge financial adventure. So it's
an interesting one, because you know what this does, and it just shows the tribalism of football. Mm. You know, and how it's very easy for all of us to make justifications. And you mentioned the LGBTQ plus situation, and you know, I feel sorry for the guy who heads it up at Newcastle, but his statement was appalling.
Mm.
You know, it was you know, shocking. And I know Steph at Palace has, you know, been, you know, concerned about that, and also the centralized group. But it's actually a cultural manifestation of how easy it is to become very tribal, to be able to have blinkers on, as we all do, I think, in football. You know, it's the most irrational sport, if not area of culture in the world, is football, right? You know, so it's so that's the main thing, is how are we able to stand back and take blinkers off? I mean, ironically, Manchester United fans did it when some of them did it when the Glazers came in, yeah. Right? You know, so but quickly, just back to the march, which I didn't do and I haven't done, and I must do it. My only gripe is the funding. The way you donate. So people like, you know, Mark Silverstein and Steph, I've mentioned, I want to be able to give money to everyone doing it. But if there was another way of doing it where I didn't feel guilty. So I funded you the 5-year plan primarily as a means of just getting on the podcast again.
And it worked.
Well,
it worked so well.
But the likes of Mark and Steph, it's, you know, it, the money's going central, I guess. That's
exactly.
It's going to the central pot. The
same place. And Palace for Life, I know, are really, really appreciative. Let me make sure that I thank the right people. I want to thank Mike and Bobby, who came on last week from the foundation, obviously. Tash and Gary and everyone at the foundation, who are just absolutely brilliant. I thought the route was great this year, Kevin. We've had a few questions about that, actually. Crispin Chappell.
Hi, Crispin.
Says, turns out when you reverse the route with hills, there are still hills. Yes, there were a few. Anyone well, feet?
The bastard who put the last 2 mile up Sintra Hill, and then you know, first of all, that's the hill outside Crystal Palace, and then up Sintra Hill, and then tried to take us uphill through the park, which luckily we all knew a shortcut, and because the street is map reading was so shit, we'd already done 28 miles. So we decided to do that, but yeah, the route was better than last year, I thought, the refreshments, but he's quite right, you can't get rid of the hills eventually. But the trouble is, we all know a route that doesn't take us uphill.
Well, yeah, yeah. We're all too South London. He had anyone's feet, knees and hips telling them that still. There we go, another great day he's put. One final question then, and I want to make sure that we have thanked everyone. We obviously thank all people that donated, we really, really appreciate it, and everyone that did the march as well. Andrew Stewart.
Hi, Andrew.
Who's one of our patrons, who I met on the walk on Saturday. If you could pick any of the current squad to walk the whole of next year's marathon march with you, who would it be and why? Kevin?
We noticed you. That was another source of conversation. That every now and again, you disappear and we'd go, oh, he's talking to a patron, isn't he? They were kept away from the rest of us. The legacy pod people were kept away from the patrons. Every now and again, somebody would sidle up to JD, offer him a fiver for a private chat, like some lap dancer.
Again, that's libelous, and I would do need to refute that.
It was tawdry. Do you know, that's a really good question. I'd probably Joel. I'd know Joel Ward, actually. It strikes me as somebody who would be interesting coming. I'd really like to do it with JC, to be perfectly honest, because the hours would fly by with JC's stories inside. but no, I don't, that's a good question.
Yeah, I think Wardy's a good shout. Conor Gallagher seems like he'd be quite fun company, I think.
Conor Gallagher is like, I would say Conor Gallagher would be fun company for about 25 minutes. And then after that, he'd be like, look, shut, please. Stop it, will it?
I'd go for Martin Kelly. Apparently, he's a real big environmentalist.
He is.
So, you know, he'd be, yeah.
Is he?
Well, do you know what? That's interesting. We should get him on because I think that's the next big thing in football is going to be sustainability.
Yeah.
It's something that's just... gambling in football is something at the moment that's occupying a lot of people's minds, but people are just starting to think about how football needs to lower its carbon footprint. You know, the amount of, you know, not flying to domestic away games, for example, collecting rainwater to irrigate pitches. There's all sorts of ways football could make itself. And this comes out. There's a study recently that said if the temperatures keep rising as they are, that in 19 years' time, 42 football league grounds will be underwater.
Blimey.
Basically. And that's, if you think that's, if you remember Gaza crying, that's less time from then till now than 45 grounds being underwater.
Wow.
Luckily, one of them would be Brighton's. So that is, there's a silver lining to every cloud. But I think that's going to be the next big thing.
And the FA will still, the Premiership will still get the players to take the knee because they've done five. All about racism, so
yeah, but they'll be taking the knee on a soggier pitch.
Right, well, anyway, listen, massive thank yous to everybody from the foundation, to our supporters and to other people that took part of the weekend. We really appreciate it. We are still accepting donations if you'd like to. We're very close to £12,000, so you can donate at justgiving.com/fundraising/FYP Marathon March 2021. I don't know how long it's going to stay open for, but if you'd like to support us, please do, because I know the foundation would love it. If we can get the foundation over 100,000 overall, that would be absolutely amazing. Anyway, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, questions. When it came to interviewing and appointing a candidate for the top job this summer, Palace got it spot on. And so can you with LinkedIn Jobs. Today, many small business owners are busier than ever. Time spent searching for and interviewing candidates can take time away from managing and growing a business. That's why LinkedIn Jobs has made it easier to get to the candidates worth interviewing faster and free. JC, you're aware of LinkedIn Jobs, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn as a consultant all the time because that's almost like where my network is, and it is becoming more and more powerful as a tool to find either candidates for employment or freelance. But also, if you are like me or you're working for a company, it's a great way to kind of put yourself out there. The algorithm eats you up in a positive way, and your network, who already know you, get to know you even better. And it really puts you, you know, on a kind of different step for thinking about jobs. And then it also will give you, feed you jobs as well, comparing to your match. So it's a powerful tool.
Absolutely right. Create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond of the world's largest professional network with over 30 million people in the UK. Focus on candidates with the skills and experience you need. A bit like Palace trying to find midfielders younger than 45. Use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified people. Then use simple tools on LinkedIn Jobs to quickly filter and prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates worth interviewing faster. And you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/FYP. Again, that's linkedin.com/FYP to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Welcome back to the Fiverr Plan Podcast.
Hey!
Pod 398 International Break Special. I didn't do a shout out for a patron in part one, which is terrible on my part. So can I get a free? Can I get just a drum roll? It is free, but can I get a drum roll, please? It's Mr. James Gross.
Hey, James. Hey.
Hello, James. You can join our Patreon, like James, and get all the rewards that entails, like post-match podcasts, patron-only merchandise, and access the patron-only WhatsApp club at patreon.com/FYP podcast. That's patreon.com/FYP podcast. Do you have your hand up there, Kevin?
No.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to make a disparaging comment about the patrons.
No. I might have been putting my hand up to apply to become one. You never know.
We will talk about that off air. I'll do you a lovely discount. Tickets to our live pod.
Discount? I've been doing this pod for nothing for 15 years. I get a discount. Holy mother.
You've earned it. tickets to our live podcast on Thursday, the 11th of November.
I'm performing at that. I don't need a fucking ticket for that.
I'll give you a discount for that as well. Don't worry. And I'll sort you out. Tickets for our live podcast with a mystery Palace legend as a guest are still available. There's literally about 15, 16 left. So be quick if you want to get in before we sell out. 7:30 p.m. Streatham Space Project. Get your tickets at eventbrite.co.uk and just search FYP Podcast Live.
JD, we discussed this on the march on Saturday.
Yeah.
That's 4 weeks running. You said there's literally only 15 tickets left.
No, I said 20 last week.
It was 30 the week before.
And I could send you proof if you would like it. No, they are selling fast. So, and we did sell out last year as well. So if you are interested, please do get a ticket ASAP.
Is it Martin Kelly?
It is. And we're gonna have an hour's presentation on climate change.
He's not that far off the truth.
No. Kevin,
well, it's not Ian Wright, let's put it that way.
It's not Wrighty, no. But who knows? One day maybe. Anyway, let's crack on with some questions from our listeners. We had quite a few questions about Newcastle. I feel like we've covered that in part one, although it may well be something we talk about in future pods. Who knows? Here's a question from Joseph Podsiadly.
Hi, Joseph.
He says, firstly, congratulations on raising a fantastic amount. Thank you very much. Wonderful effort from everyone involved. Absolutely. Secondly, as it's International Week, it's great to have a full senior internationals in the first team. But how beneficial do you think it is for our academy players to see the likes of Guéhi, Gallagher and Eze turning out for England under 23s? Kevin, that's a nice point there from Joseph.
You'd imagine it can only be aspirational for them to see players from a similar background to them, in particular South London, getting into the full England team, without a doubt. And there's always a difficult situation, as JT will know. You've got a lot of players in our academy who could choose other countries to play for, but will want, I imagine, most of them will want to represent England, which is very, very difficult to do. So to see young players that they see every day getting into the England squad is fantastic. It's just the only worry is, as kind of happened with Wilf when he was sort of overlooked as a youngster, as if you're playing for Palace, and it should change now, we've got a Category 1 academy, but you know, England managers essentially choose their pool of talent from a limited number of clubs. It's getting better. It's not like the old days when if you didn't play for Liverpool, Man U, you virtually weren't going to get in the England team, but You still think, even with Gareth Southgate, you still think he's not really particularly looking at Palace players. It doesn't occur to them. It's just a club that will provide England with, but we will win, and we will do in future. So it's got to be good for them to see them getting in those under 21 teams.
Yeah, I think, Joe, as well, it's good for them to see that if you're playing for a team like Palace, then, you know, as Kevin says, hopefully you do get recognition at the highest level. And hopefully, do you think that is changing, that the call-ups do go down more to form than reputation?
I mean, Southgate's been quite interesting with his decision-making. I think even in his most recent press conference ahead of tonight's game, he said, I commit a crime every time I pick a team. And I think he's aware that he's inconsistent with his reasoning. What he'll say in one press conference for a player's exclusion doesn't apply to Harry Kane in the same equally. So I get that. I think we have reason to be encouraged nonetheless. I think you have to remember Eze was effectively meant to be in that larger pre-Euro squad that to be tested out. And I think that's one to keep an eye on, by the way, because I follow a lot of people who are, you say, African diaspora in the UK, and Nigeria in particular are really stepping up this program of trying to get in British Nigerian diaspora, second generation kids who maybe are on the peripheries of the England squad, but they can get sort of a guaranteed starters for Nigeria. And Eze is absolutely one of those that's been earmarked and I think has been put to him before. So whether England, sometimes when that becomes a bit more public and apparent, England seem to kind of get in there pretty quickly and nail some players down. They did it with Sterling. They did it with Zaha, funnily enough, although that still didn't work out. Carl Jenkinson, I remember getting a cap quite young in order to keep him from Finland or somewhere, I think it was. So that's what, an interesting one to keep an eye on. Beyond that, I made a very unwise bet, or just very hopeful bet. Gay to make the Qatar 2022 squad. I've 16 to 1 with one particular bookmaker. So I've went in with that because I think England, as much as they, I was proud of them in the Euros. I think they were, that was the area of the pitch where someone was most likely to come in and maybe take a place of somebody in the squad. Because I mean, Connor Cody gets in the current England squad, who's pretty good in the back three. In the back four, I'm not so convinced. And I think Gay could quite easily, on this form that he's currently on, maybe this round the fixtures came a bit too soon, but I think he's someone that is very likely to at least get a cap in the senior side. You're talking about the under 21 captain as well, by the way, to make that step up in if he continues to impress this season. Gallagher, I think, is in a very competitive area of the pitch, so who knows? Maybe he has to go back to Chelsea to prove himself, quote unquote. Mitchell, I still hold out hope because we're playing right backs at left back sometimes, and you know, I don't want to rule that out. And I think one of those getting that call up, I think, would be so energizing for players a couple of years younger who are at the club. Raksacki's in the England setup now, I think, under 20 level, which is above his age group. Stuff like that. Yeah, that's if it can happen here, then there's no reason why you need to have that agent twisting your arm and saying, you know, you're gonna have to go over there to really make that next step up. And that's if it can happen here, I believe it can, then that's that allows us to build on, you know, bringing in the next generation and keep convincing people to stick around a bit longer and not go to another academy, not go to somewhere else to kick on their career.
I think Gallagher's the one who's got the most chance of getting there, because I think Gay is too good a footballer for Southgate, basically. And we saw that with the irony is that the better, more creative player we turn out, the less chance they've got of getting in Southgate's squad. You saw that. He didn't want to play Grealish in the Euros. I don't think he wants to play Grealish now. But Gallagher, who's all action and will win the ball all over the pitch, is far more like his play. Southgate doesn't like footballing centre-backs. He doesn't want his centre-backs to play football, I think. He wants them to defend. He wants, you know, he loves Maguire, because Maguire, he can get his head on the ball, the ball on his feet. He's not in a national level centre-back. Stones is a decent footballer, but Southgate won't pick him as a first choice, I don't think. So I think Mitchell, for me, is the one who should be in the squad now. I think, like you say, we're short of left-backs. And Mitchell, you see Mitchell's stats, his defensive stats are brilliant, but also, you know, his crossing is fantastic. He gets forward really well. I mean, it's him. That's the exciting thing about the first goal against Leicester, is a teenager crossing the ball for a teenager. But again, Southgate, I don't think Southgate will blood youngsters. You know, he wants players 24, 25. He's essentially conservative in his nature, Gareth Southgate, I think, and probably in his politics by the look of him, I don't know. But he's got
the elf I have to cut.
I'm just speculating. He looks like, hang on, just by looking at him, who do you think he's? I'm sure JC would agree with me. JC's shares some of the same illogical opinions I have based on just looks alone.
JC, I'm looking at you.
Going back to the original question, I think Joe picked up on this, but now we're category A or category one set up. And if you're bringing your kid through and you're a parent and it's maybe pre-agent time, you're going to be expecting that now. You know, that it's going to really help the club that we've got two or three players playing under 23s, that we've got the captain of England under 23s, you know, and that's going to, I think, just raise the level, because then you can start imagining, well, look, that's where my son's going to be training with or in that environment. So it's up the ante a bit. It helps promote the club from the kind of the youth system up, really.
Mm.
And we are, JC, we are overdue an England full cap at Palace, aren't we? It's we feel like we've been close, haven't we, a few times?
Yeah, I couldn't give a toss about England. I support Ireland. I'm more interested in the Irish youth at Palace.
Who was our last England international?
I believe it was Townsend, very early was into it? Signing him. Yeah.
Because Wan-Bissaka, was it Man U before he got into England, wasn't he?
Yeah. We just signed him, and it was that Pardew. I seem to remember we had a barnstorming game. We beat Stoke at home about by 3 or 4.
Yeah,
and he got a call up off the back of that, but not anyone since. No.
No. I remember as a kid when Paddy Mulligan got in the Ireland team. That was really exciting. I mean, it's our first international for a long, long time. It's not, we've got an actual international on the pitch.
I don't think Henry Houghton did, or Henry Hughes.
If you want to say, JC, actually, if we're talking about the Ireland national team at the moment, that'd be a very different conversation. Unfortunately, they are struggling at the moment.
I know.
Not doing very well. We've got another question here about Gallagher. I might make this the last question, because we do have to do an Athletic article in a minute. Quite a few people asking about Gallagher. Obviously, he's very popular. Simon Robinson, 87.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Simon.
Says, a lot of noise around Newcastle wanting Gallagher in January/the summer. Do you know if Chelsea have a recall clause? And if so, can you envisage a scenario where they recall him in January to sell him for Newcastle? Whereas Nelson Cade, 58, has said, do you think we should spend big to secure the signing of Conor Gallagher? Kevin, I saw these rumours, and they were saying about 14 million for Newcastle to get him. It'd be double that, if not more, surely.
I don't know the ins and outs of Conor Gallagher's contract. I'd be amazed if we haven't got him for the whole season. You pay a loan fee. People think that loan players come for nothing. They don't. You pay a fee to loan a player like Conor Gallagher, and obviously we'll be paying his wages. I'd be amazed if Chelsea were to do that. And I can't see any reason why Conor Gallagher would want to do that, to be perfectly honest. He's catching the eye as a Palace player. He's not going to get any more attention from Gareth Southgate by going to Newcastle. I mean, obviously, it's a different ball game when his loan period ends. But even if there was a recall clause, which I shouldn't think there is, I don't think Chelsea would do it. I don't think it would look politically very good. We're a club they have a good relationship with. We tend to have a Chelsea player per season. They need to keep relations good. I mean, their model is loaning out the 44, 45 kids that they've got. So I'd be surprised. Whenever a club is taken over by billionaires, people assume that they will be able to buy their way into anything. And it's like, I'm not ruling out, but I'd be very surprised, because I imagine we're a clever enough club now to make sure that we've got him for the whole season.
I mean, also, you'd assume that Newcastle will sign so many mad players in the next window that there's no guarantee you go there and you know, play.
I'm going to be really interested to see what they do in the window, to be honest. Because I think for all Mike Ashley's conspiracy theories about the Premier League and the government not wanting them to buy Newcastle, I don't think they wanted to buy a club that aren't guaranteed to stay up, to be perfectly honest. I think that was a simple reason. And then people say, well, why didn't they buy it in the summer when they did stay up? Because then they would have had to pay 400 million quid to get enough talent to guarantee staying up. I think they'll look at where they are. If they're comfortably mid-table by Christmas, I don't think they'll spend a lot of money bringing people in. I think they'll wait till the summer and then have the massive PR thing. The kit will get changed. They'll do some stuff to the stadium, which is the most underinvested stadium in the Premier League by a country mile. He's put no money into that stadium at all, almost literally no money into that stadium. So I don't think they'll go completely bonkers in this transfer window. Because also if they were to bring in four, if they bring in Lionel Messi and whatever, and everyone gets excited, still don't guarantee him staying up if they're 17th.
It would create a real issue for my fantasy team as well, unfortunately. Here's a question, Joe, from Crumply Addo.
Crumply,
one of our regulars. Discussion point: what's the post Gallagher contingency plan? Short of a ridiculous fee, he'll inevitably return to Chelsea and warm their bench till the end of time. This stinks of when we fell in love with Ruben Loftus-Cheek and then spent the next four seasons lamenting how much we missed him in the middle.
I don't know. I honestly don't really. I haven't been following the youngsters religiously enough to know if there's a ready-made youngster that's going to step in themselves in the next couple of years. There's no one that's necessarily stood out in that position. I guess that would probably be our kind of focus target signing then in the next, let's say next summer rather than January, a player in that mold again. Because despite bringing in a Will Hughes and other midfielders, I don't think that's in view to replace Gallagher when he goes on his way. I think that's just to be bulking up the squad. So I haven't seen us linked with any body. This is still, I guess it's so early to be seeing any kind of real manifestation of who would be looking at post Gallagher if that is who, if we don't end up getting him. Although weirdly, going back to the last question, I think a lot of worried Palace fans have been imagining these scenarios of this Newcastle trolley dash where, you know, clubs that tend to get that new investment, they overpay for players that aren't actually, they're either on their way down or clubs around them. And I think a lot of people were worried that, oh, is this the, are Newcastle going to be the club that pays 70 million for Wilf? Are they going to be the club that throw money at Eze out of nowhere that turns his head? I think that might be a little unfounded, but of course that's easy to say now.
I'd be interested to see if JC agrees with me on this, but never mind a Conor Gallagher replacement plan. We need a Macca replacement plan, essentially, who this season, and I owe him a huge apology. I thought he'd be on his way out and I wouldn't have minded that much. Just excellent at the moment, one of the best Premier League. I mean, Jermaine Jenas did his whole profile package after the Leicester game was about McArthur being the ideal Premier League footballer. And where that's come from, I don't know, whether it's his own attitude or coaching, but wow, he's a brilliant. Yeah.
Well, Kevin, you can apologise to him at the live podcast in a couple of weeks. No, he's not our guest, does he?
Well, he's not a patron either, so he won't get a discount on his ticket. But JC, you're as big a fan of Macca as I am, aren't you?
Yeah, I used not to be. I mean, yeah. I remember walking back from the pub after watching on a dodgy stream Swansea versus Palace when we lost, was it 5-4? And my mate Johnny Scarlett said, you know, the baseline of our squad, of the quality of the squad, should be Jimmy Mack. You know, that's, and actually he's, I mean, last season I didn't think he was all that. The season before he did, you know, he hasn't scored, but this season he has definitely. I mean, it's whether or not that's Vieira, maybe it's the style of play, but you know, maybe he's got slightly younger legs around him, but his energy is insane, right? So it's, you know, is it the twice daily training sessions has lifted him up? These all high, you know, maybe it's all of these things, but you're right. I mean, hopefully, do you feel, man, if he keeps true to form with his recent bout of recruitment, there's going to be a Jimmy Mack. Maybe it's Hughes who's going to be taking that. I don't know, but the Gallagher situation, I mean, I can imagine next season we hopefully get another Gallagher on loan. You know, I think we're allowed to do that. We're entitled to do that.
JD, if you're going to edit anything out of this pod, can you edit that bit? You said a bit about Doogie Freeman doing a really good job to Palace. You take that out.
I'm trying to warm you up for the live podcast.
Yeah, considering what you said last year. Sorry, Joe.
Is it possible Eze goes there? Considering, I think when we signed him, he was spoken about as a number 10 rather than a wide player.
Maybe. Played there a bit at the end of last season, didn't he?
Yeah,
I can't see him, even if he's back to full fitness, I can't quite see Eze having that level of energy in his legs, to be honest. I mean, it's an interesting one. I mean, the ideal scenario is that he loves it so much here that he's our big signing. And because that's the other thing about him. Well, they all do at the moment as well, but he clearly looks like he loves playing at Palace. He looks like he enjoys being the centre of attention. And again, like Joe said, he's got that decision to make himself, isn't he, at the end of his contract with us, however long that lasts. Because, you know, some people just want to play football. They don't want to be a substitute. They want to play football. And he looks like the sort of guy, he knows he's going to start every game for us.
Yeah.
He's absolutely a big fish. And from what I hear, he's noisy in training as well. So he clearly likes that. And I think maybe that's the same with Macca as well. Because I gather that Macca's taking quite a responsible role in training as well. So we saw last season, and we could hear it last season, he was talking all the way through. Even when he was on the bench, he was shouting and chatting. So maybe they've given him that little bit more responsibility, or maybe, you know, treating him like a grown-up. Who knows? But whatever the reason is, he's having a brilliant season.
Absolutely. In classic FYP fashion, for a question special, we're going to have to wrap up the questions after two questions, because I've just seen the time, and we do need to get in the Athletic part. So after the break, an article from the Athletic.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Welcome back to the Five Pound Podcast.
Hey!
We're supported this week by The Athletic, bringing you every football story that matters. The Athletic is home to the best collection of football reporters, storytellers, and analysis in the world, from breaking club news to excellent interviews, brilliant features, tactical analysis. The Athletic is football news you can trust and football writing you can feel. Get all access to exclusive stories ad-free. And if you go to theathletic.com/FYP, that's theathletic.com/FYP for 50% off your annual subscription to The Athletic. That's 30 quid a year for sports journalism that brings you closer to the action. This week's article is about Josh Harris, a rare interview from the Palace co-investor. The article is called Palace on the Right Side of History, and we're on the rise, Josh Harris on Vieira community and the club's future. And here's a little clip from this feature written by Matt Woosnam. Harris spoke seemingly with pride of the work he and others had done during the coronavirus crisis to invest in vaccines, to work on technology that helped produce those vaccines, and in purchasing protective equipment throughout the pandemic. It made me realize three things, he said. South London, Newark, Philadelphia. These cities went through terrible times, but we were part of the community, he says, of what prompted them to step up, in quote marks, and involve themselves in trying to help. Kevin, the article goes on, actually, a lot of talk from Harris, particularly around sort of community, and that seems to be a reason that he got involved. It's very interesting hearing him talk about the three cities there that he has invested in terms of the sports teams. And it's just interesting hearing him talk in general, because I know, you know, we said on the podcast before, we're sort of lamenting the fact we haven't heard much from him and David Plitzer, but it was very interesting. And when you tie it into, obviously, we talked about John Textor at the top and him donating to us. We're starting to get a bigger picture now of these investors. And it seems that community seems to be a big part of that.
I'm intrigued by the timing of this interview, to be honest, because we have said time and time again that we don't hear from them. And you start to worry when you don't hear from people who are major investors in your club. You wonder whether they've lost interest. You wonder whether they had any interest in the first place. You wonder whether they're about to pull out. So you want to hear from them, and you want to hear that they share your values. I'm interested. I'd like to ask John his opinion on this, because John is an expert in the language of management. John's an expert in advising people, owners, investors, of the right thing to say to consumers, to customers, if you like. So I'm intrigued by the timing. I mean, is this, John, the sort of thing you would advise somebody to be doing all the time, or far more than he does? Because it does make you wonder why. Maybe it's because of text or stepping up. I don't know. But I'm just intrigued by particularly his appeal, as JD said, to the kind of working class fan base as well, talking about blue collar fans.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've got a bit of a kind of hypothesis that I'm not saying is fact at all. What is fact? A couple of seasons ago, you know, I think Josh Harris wanted out, you know, so there was active looking to sell, where I think Blitzer was more keen to stay. And we know, I think Blitzer's bought a Spanish club or invested in a Spanish club, et cetera, et cetera. So Harris wanted out. There's been a big change to Harris in the last few months. So he was one of, I think, three co-founders of Apollo, which are probably the US's most successful kind of investors. And they are extremely successful in what they do. One of the founders then, and this is not secret, this is in the press, so I'm hoping to say this right, had associations with Epstein. And there was issues around loans that he got from Epstein and whether or not it also went into a friendship as well. We're not sure. It was Josh Harris that instigated the investigation because realizing, you know, there's the value system of what Apollo stands for. Secondly, you know, we've got to invest, you know, we're investing big money, which includes, you know, insurance for, you know, thousands of Americans. We can't have this as a bad thing. So they hired a New York law firm that came in and did an internal thing. The end game was that this co-founder decided that he would be stepping down from his role in a few weeks or few months time later, which I think Josh Harris wasn't too happy about. The other then founder has taken on that lead role and not Harris. And I think bets were down that it probably would be Harris that would have taken over. So it means now Harris is stepping has a more of a backseat with Apollo, still has, you know, a role there. And he's, I think, now looking at his sports investments. So that goes on to Harris Blitzer Sports Entertainment Company. So that's the two of them coming together. They've got the 76ers, NBA. They've got the New Jersey Devils, NHL. But below that, then, they've got teams like Delaware Bluecoats, which are in the NBA G League, right? That's the kind of feeder. They've got the Bingham Devils, who are the AHL, which again is the leagues below the NHL, but they'll be feeding young players into the NHL. So there's a good investment there. They've got real estate, massive venues for concerts, for sports events. They've got the 76ers Gaming Club, eSports, which is Blitzer's, some of his expertise. They've got the 76ers Innovation Club. I think 2 years ago, we would have seen Crystal Palace as a logo on there, but they're not there. Palace isn't there anymore, which makes sense because it's very much America-centric kind of focus. Now, you go onto the website, which is really interesting, that all they do is wax you straight away with community. Okay, using sport. And then you kind of think, okay, this is kind of usual business bullshit and stuff. You then go further and further and further down. What is actually our business model? And then it starts talking about we're going to combat systemic racism. And you're going, what? This is it. This is like gloves off, right? This is, you know, going for it. They're investing $10 million over 5 years into the looking at equality, but also for the $20 million, I think, dollars into systemic racism and promoting Black-owned businesses. So now this is kind of radical all of a sudden. These are billionaires, you know, New York guys coming in saying, you know, this is really, if we're going to talk about community, we might as well put it where it is. And the fact that they are focusing on one of the biggest cancers in the US, which is racism, as it's, you know, they're almost coming across now as being woke, you know, that's the, and it's, the further you go down into the website, you realize actually there's some real backbone here, you know, so I can understand why Palace isn't visible there. Because it's not America. There's a different cultural thing there. And then they can probably look and see the Palace Foundation and things like that. But they're doing some really radical stuff in a business structure of they're making money, right? But they're feeding some of that investment into it. So that's why I think we're hearing him speak, right? That because he no longer has to. Now he can step up. His focus is a lot on sport. And now he can come into the fold. They're much more entrepreneurial, Harris's innovation is a key thing. It kicks what we're seeing in Newcastle out of the water with that type of commitment, right? So it's actually, you make your money through innovation entrepreneurship.
That, can I first say, that is absolutely fascinating. I think that's the first time anyone in the FYP podcast has ever done research into anything, possibly. So thank you for that, John. That's a genuine eye-opener.
But that's also great insight, because I learned more about the Harris and Blitzer then than I've known since they invested, to be perfectly honest. And it's also encouraging to hear you say, John, because I know you would say it, that it's more than lip service. They're not just putting the logos on the front of the screen and saying, yeah, we'll help. That's really encouraging to discover that.
Well, can I put another clip here from the article to Joe that is similar to that, actually, that I picked out from Matt's article? It says, if Harris's only interest is financial, then it was well disguised here. And this article is talking about an interview that Josh Harris did last week. He portrayed a persona that suggests he cares not only about the investments he makes, but also the supporters and the community. And here's a quote. Sport assets are unique, he explained. You generally lose money, but you have to build something unique. Joe, does it feel like they are doing that here?
I think that's to TBC, you know, I because of the silence prior to this, we haven't really known what their aims and objectives were. I think when Harrison and Blitzer first came in, the onus was on, we've ring-fenced some money for the stadium development. And obviously there's been various obstacles to that that are probably out of their hands. I'm not going to hold that against them. But, you know, what I did like about the whole interview really was, yes, it was a business conference last week, and I imagine he knew that there would be questions about Palace, whether or not he was emotionally invested as much as he was previously, possibly. But there's just certain things that was discussed and certain specific references that just seemed to reassure me that it was beyond lip service. So when he spoke about the community and the coronavirus actions and investment that he'd made on equipment, for example, he also was keen to reference the fact that Wilford really stepped up during that time. And I don't think there was any real necessity for you to mention that or be told that prior to a conference. You know, I think that gave me an idea that he was obviously still having quite an emotional investment in what's going on and how the clubs and the community is reacting to the last 18 months. And if that's the onus that he wants to kick on with, if the stadium thing is going to have to sit on the shelf for X amount of time, where else can they help and contribute? Is it now easier for him now that there's a Texter and forgive me the name of the South African investor, I believe. And there's mention in this article, Matt Wiesner talks about some of the people that have bought shares off others, and Martin Long shares have gone. And I think it's a much more complex ownership system than we've ever had, but it probably allows Josh Harris to probably come up for air a little bit and help to enact some of the visions he might have had 6 years ago, but didn't expect because of relegation threats or whatever, to keep having to throw in. Like, I don't, for example, the Allardyce January window where we spent fortunes, I don't think they expected to ever have to do that again. At least just to stay up, they would have thought that would be for a European push. So now we're kind of probably, as a club, with the squad that we've got and the money that's been spent and the value of the squad, at least on the pitch, we're in the same position as we probably were when Harris and Blitzer first came in terms of, right, what can we aim for here? We're looking forward instead of back again. And if that energizes the kind of longer standing ownership, I think that's only a good thing.
It's interesting as well, when Textor came in, and I keep wanting to say Textor, it should be Textor.
Yeah,
probably, you're right. But when Textor came in, they very specifically said that his money was going on infrastructure. They said that, he said that, I'm buying into this club, that I'm investing in the infrastructure, which made me wonder if that's released Harrison Blitzer's money, you know, if it's their money that's paying for players and Textor who's building the new stand, if that ever happens. Because otherwise, John, why would they specify that? What his investment was for? You wouldn't normally do that, would you, when you're buying into a club?
I wouldn't know that. I mean, I think it could be a good kind of marketing ploy, you know, right, kind of calm suit, but I wouldn't know exactly why they did that. As Joe said, they did it with Harrison Blitzer coming in, about the stadium, et cetera, and that hasn't happened. So I think I wouldn't read just too much into that.
Okay.
I really would. But the other thing about Harris is also, you know, in that interview, I watched the interview in Twickenham and he, you know, he talked about Croydon as well. And it always kind of makes me feel proud when someone overseas. And I think, you know, that thing around and seeing now Newark, and I don't know if anyone, if you've been to Newark and yep, beyond the airport, but it's a hard city, right? And it has that parallel with Croydon. And he probably gets that and sees that. And, you know, the 76ers and the Devils, they weren't doing well. And he still isn't popular with 76 fans, as for some of them, but they are in such a stronger position as a basketball team and are now competing for the NBA, for the championship. So maybe he sees the time. I think the other thing it's worth saying is that in this relationship with Steve Parrish, you know, Steve Parrish has become more of an expert over time, not just learning from them, but just by being involved in football. You know, and that's something I think that's really positive as well. So it's almost like the three of them are hopefully flourishing together.
Well, it's just very interesting, as we've not really heard from him before, to get this chance to sort of look into how he sees his position and plans for the club. So do read that article if you get the chance at The Athletic. And if you go to theathletic.com/FYP, you can get 50% off an annual subscription to The Athletic. Right after the break, a super quick preview of the Arsenal game.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Welcome back to the 5-Year Plan Podcast.
Hey!
Now, we do have an actual game coming up. Obviously, international break is a nice chance for us to dip into some subjects we wouldn't normally do, which has been great this episode. There is a game. Arsenal away on Monday night. Premier League loves giving us Monday night games. So we are back at it, back at playing football again. Feels like ages since we last seen Palace play. Kevin, most of the questions regarding that Arsenal game are about Michael Olise, who, of course, had a massive impact off the bench against Leicester in our last game. Tony Phillips.
Hi, Tony.
And James Jeffrey.
Hi, James.
Have both asked pretty much the same question. Should Olise start against Arsenal?
I think so. But again, whether that's going to be the case, I don't know. That was probably the only thing we've still got left to moan about or talk about is Jordan Ayew, essentially. And Vieira clearly puts a lot of faith and trust in Ayew. Keeps talking about him, so he anticipates that he's going to be asked about him, and he talks about his defensive work and coming in off the flank to help the midfield and so on and so forth. I don't think he will start, to be perfectly honest, but I would prefer him to start. I think the most difficult thing about Monday night is going to be to take the emotion out of the game, because it's going to be one of those rare games where the home fans cheer our manager on as much as we do. And it's going to be a massive night for Patrick Vieira. So we have to sort of distance ourselves from that in a way that we failed to do when we were part of the Tottenham new stadium opening night. That clearly got to us. You could see the players getting nervous as all the hoo-ha went on. So I would like to see Olise play. I think he's a brilliant weapon to have off the bench if he doesn't start. But I think for me, that's the next part of the jigsaw puzzle, is to sort out the IU problem and put somebody more dynamic, more able to get us goals. But it's an away game against Arsenal, so I don't think that'll be where he makes his full debut. Having said that, I think Arsenal, and I'm touching wood here, are probably tailor-made for the way we play football. I think in previous years, we know exactly what we'd have done away to Arsenal. We'd have, you know, defended and tried to do, you know, I think we'll go for it. I think we'll have a positive approach, and I think that will suit us. And it's for the first time we can say, we go there without any fear, I think.
Yeah, Arsenal, Joe, have found a bit of form actually recently. So it won't be as easy as previous years, but it certainly won't be. We do have a fairly decent record against them, actually. A lot of draws at the Emirates. So it will be interesting. Vieira did say after the Leicester game, I was asked about Olise, obviously, and did say that his introduction to the team or to starting will take time. So I think Kevin's right. He probably will still go with Ayew for this away game. But if it was you, would you be giving Olise that start?
I would. I've fallen into the trap. I think we all have, actually, that this Arsenal game feels really, really winnable and everyone's really, really confident, you know, sort of making these bold predictions. This will be Arteta's coffin nail, you know, all that stuff. But I agree with Kevin, though. I would be surprised if not delighted, if Vieira started him, I think we're more likely to see that against Newcastle at home for a first start, possibly earmarking for that. But yeah, I think we should go at them 100%. I don't see why we should change how we play. And ultimately, their form has picked up somewhat since the start of the season, Arsenal, but the teams they have beaten have not been really... Tottenham aside, I think they've beaten Norwich.
Burnley.
And Burnley.
And Brighton.
Tour of Brighton, yeah.
Yeah, so I think this is a time to be brave. Maybe not... I think Vieira might, if he gets to the occasion a bit too much, might go very gung-ho. But I'm not mad at that particularly. I'm going there Monday night. I'm quite looking forward to going toe-to-toe with them. Just because I think there's certain areas of the pitch that you can outrun them, you can just outbattle them. And that's the Arsenal cliches, really, when you talk about facing them. But I really believe in how we play and the players we've got. And isn't that lovely to say? Like, yeah. I'm just really, really hopeful for that game.
I feel the same way. And JC, I felt the same way at the Leicester game. Even at half time, I sort of felt, well, if we're going to lose this, I know we're going to put in a good display second half. And then I almost don't mind. Like, I almost feel quite relaxed watching Palace at the moment, knowing I'm probably going to be entertained. The fact we've got 7 points on the board also gives me that sort of comfort zone as well. So, yeah, maybe, I don't know, JC, maybe Palace should just go for it Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in agreement both with Joe and Kevin, and both, I think both opinions are totally rational. You know, I'm thinking, are you cover for Ward? And then you think, are you up against Turner? You know, will that get us anything? But, you know, especially in first halves, I think he can, you know, get fouls, break up the play a bit, that type. I mean, the one thing I was impressed also, though, with Elise when he came on in the second half, I was interested, how's he going to cover with Ward? And I thought he looked very competent defensively, which was, and also, you know, he's had a season plus in the Championship, which is hard. He didn't look like physically he was out of sorts. So if he did start, Elisa, I still wouldn't be too worried about the defensive side of things.
God, it's a nice position to be in, guys, isn't it? Going into games quite confident. We haven't had this for a long time, but that's lovely. I think that's a nice part to end the pod on. So thank you very much for joining me. We've covered a range of subjects there. It's been really enjoyable talking to you guys, and thank you very much. And of course, we'll be back next week with another pod. So Kevin, until then, have a great week.
Thank you very much.
JC, good to have you back on.
Thank you so much.
Top Manor, thank you for your insight into Harris there. It was very, very interesting. And Joe, great to see you again. And, you know, good luck with any more nightclub ventures.
Thank you. I'm doing a longer run-up this time. Yeah, I'm getting early nights in. Thank you.
Good stuff. And thank you to our listeners. Thank you very much. Of course, join our Patreon for a post-match podcast on Monday night with Adam, Rob and Selzy. Patreon.com/FYP podcast. And live pod tickets to our live podcast on the 11th of November, Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. Streatham Space Project with a Mystery Palace guest are on sale at eventbrite.co.uk. Until then, enjoy the rest of your week and we'll see you again very soon. Goodbye.
When it comes to business and meeting travel in Orlando, it's never business as usual. Sure, I could go on for days about all the incredible places to hold your meeting or the innovative industries that will make you feel right at home. But Dr. Michael Edwards of Ocean Insight said it best. Orlando is as much a business capital as an entertainment one. And when work wraps up for the day, the evening is just getting started. I'd love to tell you about all the 46 Michelin-rated restaurants, or the array of outstanding dishes that'll have you coming back again and again. But Executive Chef Guillaume Rabin of Lake Nona Wave Hotel can sum it up better than me. Orlando has a world of artisans, so you can try incredible cuisines from across the globe. It's so true, and there's so much more. So dive in and see what's happening in Orlando, where the possibilities for business travel are unbelievably real. Learn more at orlandoforbusiness.com.
Social Podcast Network.